Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The McNeil and Parkins Show.
670 The Score in Chicago. Shout out to you guys, McNeil and Parkins. Love you guys.
Afternoons on The Score.
Warm greetings. Welcome to SportsCenter alongside tag team partner Keith Olbermann. I'm Dan Patrick.
It's just in, Michael Jordan has retired. No, not really. Coming up in the next 60 minutes, a deja vu day in the tournament. A baseball manager calls replacement ball a travesty and all the NBA. But first, guess who?
Baseball's loss, basketball's gain. It was back in January in Scottsdale, Arizona, when Michael Jordan, prior to his Arizona Fall League game, told me, "Don't even ask the question. You already know the answer." His basketball career was hermetically sealed forever. But during the next 20 minutes, Jordan spoke of nothing but the NBA, including how his old team would fare, why the Suns wouldn't win the title, and the outrageous salaries of rookies. 2 months later, and 9 days following his baseball retirement, Michael's hoop dreams were on the air once again. To Market Square Arena we go. The last Chicago player to wear number 45, Ed Neely. Michael, a little bit nervous, trying to live up to Ed Neely. He put his pants on backwards. Not quite a Disney ending for Michael Jordan, but he's back. Your final 103-96. The division-leading Pacers have won three in a row. Mike's numbers, 19 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds, 3 steals. Following the game, Michael said he didn't live up to Michael's expectations.
Good times, bad times.
Covered all of it. Let's go out east to talk some of those Last Dance Bulls with a guy who is one of the most successful sportscasters in North America for the last quarter century. Dan Patrick joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Man, you sounded so crisp and so young, and your hair was a few hues darker back in those days. Dan, how are you, buddy?
The older I get, the better I was, Mac.
It is good to talk to you, and I've been doing a lot of thinking about all of our travels with the Bulls as we've been watching this Last Dance. A lot of emotions have been resurrected among Bulls fans, especially after last night and getting a look at the Bad Boys. What are your takeaways? Let's start with the Pistons last night. What did you think of the Pistons and Rodman?
Well, that's when I tell people about Dennis Rodman, the real Dennis Rodman, the basketball player. When he was with the Pistons, he was a force. He was a freakish force in nature. Could guard somebody 6'2 and 7'2. He would guard Worthy, he'd guard Bird. He just had boundless amounts of energy, and he filled in the cracks for that Piston team that I think was underrated. We didn't like them. Therefore, I don't think that they get the credit they deserve. The thing that strikes me about the Pistons is you didn't care if people liked you back then. You didn't make any apologies. You didn't make any excuses. And now you're making apologies and excuses. Mm-hmm. Own it. You guys weren't well liked. So what? Mm-hmm. You know what? If I was Isaiah last night or in the documentary, I would have said, no, we didn't like him. And we still don't like him. I mean, that's how Michael feels about the Pistons. Isaiah can't go, you know, knowing what we know now, you know, I would have apologized to them. No, that's not the answer. The answer is we walked off and we make no apologies. We played our style of basketball. They beat us. And you know what? They were better that day. That's it. No apologies.
Did it occur to you last night, where was David Stern during the Bad Boys of the Pistons? Why wasn't the league enforcing rules that they played, frankly, very outside of the rules, and we saw all kinds of highlights of it last night after the league struggled for so many years to get where it got to in the 80s.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, Mac, where if you're David Stern, you want to protect Jordan. Like, why are you letting the Pistons get away with this style when Jordan is clearly the future of the sport? And you allow the Knicks to do this. Mike Fratello, when he was with the Cavs, did this. They allow certain teams to employ certain players who really shouldn't have been in the league other than to be bodyguards, enforcers. This isn't hockey where I got to protect Gretzky. I mean, then, you know, Jordan needs a protector because you've allowed this style of basketball. You have a Charles Oakley in there who's going to be that bad guy. But I was surprised how physical it was. And in comparison to what it looks like now, these guys nowadays must look back and go, are you kidding me? God, that's a flagrant two. That's a flagrant two. You know, it's a different style. It doesn't even look like it's the same game.
I was going to say, Dan, the game isn't recognizable. Do you think overall the changes are for the better?
Well, I would like to see. No, I don't like the way it's played. You know, we used to have the inside out, and I like movement. I think the beauty of basketball is when there's movement, five guys are involved on both ends. And instead of just standing around, let me ISO, even when you did the two-man game, the inside-outside game, now it's five guys on the perimeter. And I just, as much as I love gunners and shooting from deep, it's just not the same. It's not basketball. It feels like it's an elaborate game of horse, where everybody's on the perimeter, you wait to get your shot. It's nowhere near. You know, as Phil Jackson told me when he came out with his last book, I said, how many points would Mike average now? And he said he'd probably average 45 if he wanted to. And he didn't blink. He didn't, you know, wasn't in jest or anything. He was matter of fact about it. He just said, look, you can't put your hands on him, and if you can't put your hands on him, you're not going to be able to stop him.
We're talking to Dan Patrick, McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Are you enjoying the documentary?
Yeah. There was so much that happened back then that even though we were so involved in it, so close to it, there were certain things that I just missed. You know, you kind of get tunnel vision and you focus on certain things and you do your job. But there was Dennis Rodman was able to kind of grabbed the attention. He grabbed the camera. He chewed up, you know, video. Mike the same way. I didn't focus on Scotty as much as I should have. I didn't focus on Jerry Krause as much as I should have. So you're sort of missing some of the subplots there. And I remember NBA Entertainment and that film crew, because I did voiceover work for NBA Entertainment at the time. And I just remember they were shooting everything, but they told me it would never see the light of day. And for the life of me, I'm going, okay. I don't know how that makes sense, but NBA Entertainment's doing it. And, you know, maybe they're giving, you know, guys a chance to use a camera, like giving you experience. I had no idea because it just didn't make sense. But one of the producers said, yeah, it's never going to see the light of day. And I said, why? He said, well, only if Jordan allows it. And I thought he was joking. I thought, oh, Michael's running the NBA now. And little did I know when, you know, we saw all this footage and it was all these, you know, these guys from NBA Entertainment who shot all this stuff. And they were telling me the truth. They said I could never say it publicly. And I never thought to, because I thought people are going to think that's so stupid. Like, well, Jordan's going to be deciding what footage gets out. And then lo and behold, here we are.
You know, in the first two episodes last week, what got brought back to light, and some were learning it for the first time, was the high level of contempt players had for management, that Phil Jackson had for his bosses. It's remarkable to look at it some 20-plus years later and think, yeah, that's the franchise with six titles that before number six said, we're going to go to Tim Floyd and we're going to let one of the greatest of all times walk. And likely Jordan and Pippen will walk with him. That is one of the more remarkable stories of the NBA in the last 30 years.
Well, you know, it became who was getting the credit. And yeah. I didn't see it. I didn't, like, I was right there and I didn't see it. that you had Jerry Krause say, hey, what about me? Phil was getting the credit, Mike getting the credit. I think Scotty probably felt like he maybe deserved a little bit of credit. I never heard from Scotty. It was weird. He was omnipresent on the basketball floor, but he wasn't a go-to interview guy. And, you know, a lot of times I would talk to Steve Kerr and Judd Bushler. They would give me the intel, like download me on what I need to know about this. And at no point did they ever bring up Jerry Krause mm-hmm. in that he needs credit or there's so much friction. And I'm friends with Doug Collins. I didn't know that you had sort of this palace coup that was going on while Doug was there to bring in Phil. Like, there were just so many things going on. And, you know, I look back and I think I was so focused on making sure I brought Jordan to light and let them see a different Jordan. Like, that was my focus after every single one of those NBA Finals games I had him on is, how do I illuminate that guy from the standpoint of let people see that, you know, he's sneaky, funny, snarky, you know, not afraid to poke a little fun. You know, those were the things that I would see, and I wanted to bring that to light. I just didn't see all the other things in front of me. So it's weird. The closer you get, the farther away you are.
Yeah, sometimes. You know, since you took it there, I've got to ask you, in the early 90s, before Good Morning America was calling to invite you to be a guest host, before there was DirecTV and you were in all of our living rooms doing your show, what did the Bulls and your coverage of them for SportsCenter, still a growing, thriving brand, what did that mean integrally in terms of your career chart, your ascent to the top, Dan Patrick?
Oh, gosh. You know, anything that I'm given credit for is only because I was at the right place at the right time. And also, you know, I always sized up the person I was interviewing as an opponent. They had something I wanted. How do I get it? And my approach to Mike was different than my approach to Phil. You know, they're just different people, different personalities, but I was just lucky that I got to witness history. That's all it was. And I wasn't there when they beat the Blazers. Mark Jones was the reporter on site at the NBA Finals, and he was interviewing Jordan. I'm doing SportsCenter. I'm sending it out to Mark Jones in Portland. And I remember that next day I went into management and I said, next year I'm doing the NBA Finals. And I was determined because they said, okay, why? And I said, I want to be part of history. And I don't even think my boss at the time, John Walsh, knew what I was talking about. I just said, I saw it as clear as day that this guy is going to keep winning these things, and I want to be part of history. And, you know, following year, I'm interviewing Mike after games, and I just kept saying, I'm staying on until Mike's done. That was it. I stayed on a little bit longer, but, you know, it was important. I was there when he retired. You know, in Chicago. I still got my press credential for that. It was a remarkable run. I mean, I don't know Michael. I don't stay in touch. I haven't talked to him. He doesn't come on my show. But he doesn't have to. What he gave me is something that very, very, very few of us ever get in this business.
Dan, what is a favorite personal memory then, like a behind the scenes thing with you and MJ that you think back of fondly all these years later?
It's after he hit the shot in Utah, and I told this story where I had gotten to that point where I could have fun with him in those interviews. He allowed me to do that. I could poke, prod, I could, you know, getting me, you know, sort of making fun of himself a little bit there. And he laughed, and that smile was just awesome. But when he got up after they had won, and he never had his shoes on because the PR director for the Bulls always grabbed Michael's shoes after he won. He asked that of Michael. That's the only thing he ever asked for is, hey, I want your shoes. So Mike came in, no shoes on, shirt tail out, drenched in champagne, Cuban cigar, and he had either the trophy or the basketball with him. And we did the interview, and Phil's sitting off on my right, and he's ready to come on right after that. And that's when we went to commercial break. We had already gotten done. I said, you know, Michael, thank you. Let's come back to SportsCenter. And he got up, and he's 2 feet in front of me, and I said, it's a shame you're retiring. And that's when he turned around and goes, why? I said, man, I'd like a piece of you. And he goes, stand up. I go, I got my suit and tie on. We're in commercial break. I got to come back and interview Phil. Stand up. So I stand up. How the bleep would you guard me? And that's when I put my forearm out like they used to, where they would guard you with their forearm in their side. And he goes, I would bleep the bleep out of you. And he walked out the door. He just turned and walked out the door. And I went and sat down, and Phil goes, do you see what I dealt with? And I went, oh, my God. And then like 30 seconds later, hey, welcome back to SportsCenter. Here in Salt Lake is the blah, blah, and with me, Phil. And like going, oh, my God, if people only saw that on camera. He had just won a title. And he turned to me as if I was Isaiah Thomas. Like, he was like, oh, you want a piece of, oh, you really want a piece of me? And I was like, oh, my gosh.
Wow.
That's so great. As someone who did all of those interviews with him but then doesn't stay in touch with him, doesn't have him on his show, what has your perception been of, you know, Michael Jordan in his 50s doing these interviews for the documentary all these years later?
Oh, I'm glad that he's doing. I'm glad he's sharing, because there's almost, if there's a modern day Babe Ruth, it's Michael, because they're still trying to catch up with him. They're still trying to find that next Michael Jordan, and they're not going to. But the fact that he's almost become mythological, you know, they never missed a shot. You know, Jordan always won the game. Like, all these things that aren't true. He missed a free throw last night, and I went, oh, he did. He missed a shot one time. You're going, Mike had bad games, but, you know, he was the greatest closer in basketball history. And the fact that he's sharing these personality, or this personality that people have always wondered about. I saw him I was at a Jimmy Valvano golf tournament in Cary, North Carolina. Michael was there. Lou Holtz, Digger Phelps, Quinn Buckner, Charles Barkley were all seated at a table after we played a round of golf. And all I'm doing is as if I'm watching a game of tennis. It's Jordan and Barkley kind of poking at each other a little bit. And then Mike went in and started to slice and dice Barkley, and Charles stopped talking. And I went, whoa, what just happened here? And he brought up the no championship, and then Charles would kind of come back, and Mike said, no, zero. And I go, oh, my God. It was one of those where you go, I can't imagine what it would be like on the basketball floor, because this guy is going to keep coming after you. And to hear these stories, I love that he's still angry at Isaiah. I love it. I love it. Because if he wasn't, I would be disappointed in what I witnessed back then.
What are you doing to keep your sanity during these times, and how are you feeling, bud?
A lot better. You know, we had some nervous moments there back in February, where, you know, my immune system was compromised when I was going through that light chemo. And then all of a sudden, where they talked about your immune system and if you get it. And so we've been really, really, really diligent in what we do around here, and self-quarantine. And I don't go to the store. I don't go anywhere. I go to work, and there's four other people there. And I come home, and that's it. I don't do anything, and so I've been fortunate that so far, no issues, and nobody in my family has had it. But everything else is good. You know, you feel like you're doing something for somebody by being on the show every day. That's my approach. Is how do we make this enjoyable for you? How do we make you think? How do we make you laugh? How do we make you, you know, get upset an opinion? Like, we take it for granted that we get this opportunity. And I think it just reinstills that, hey, this is why you do it. You do it because you love it, but you do it because you have a gift that you can give to other people. And it just reinvigorates you. Every day you go in and go, how do we make this even better than yesterday? Who do we have on? What are we talking about? And there's people go, oh, there's nothing to talk about, no games. I go, no, there is. If you work, there are things to talk about, good guests to have on, good thought-provoking conversation, have some fun. You know, that's what it's all about. But I'm lucky I have this. The people who don't get to go to work, those people who are working on the front lines, God, I mean, all I'm doing is talking for 3 hours into a microphone. That is what a luxury I have.
I would love to see you go through your vinyl collection on the show.
Mac, I gave away all my records.
No, why would
years
you do
ago,
that?
Why? Because, okay, I was the living quarters I had with my girlfriend. I had 1,500 albums, and we needed the space.
I could have put them in my basement.
It's so painful. It's so painful. When I see an album cover, or my kids will go, you know, I'm hearing the white album is one of the great collector items. Like, yeah, I had it.
Oh,
you have a white album? Yeah, I had that. Yeah,
well,
I have a picture disc.
I hate to rub it in, but I dropped the stylus on Foghat's Fool for the City the other day.
I just started going through the catalog of, I probably had 15 Beatles albums. I had all the Zeppelins. I had all the Stones. I had all of Bowie. I had all of Aerosmith. Like, that was just at the core. And then it's so painful. It's just, you know, I sold them for $300.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask, $300. Dan, buy them back. Buy them back at a markup.
I wanted to buy a freaking record store just to have those. Like, I remember saying to my wife, how much do you think this costs? And she says, what? I said, the record store. She goes, I don't know. And it's not that I would play them. I just love looking at. I love, like, pulling out the Lynyrd Skynyrd, and, you know, you look through the album notes. And
I had
picture discs. I had Elvis Costello 45 that was red, My Funny Valentine. Like, I just, when I start to do inventory, you know, that Rolodex in my brain, and I just went, God, am I stupid. And then my kids go, hey, Dad, did you ever have vinyl? And I go, yes, I had vinyl. Damn it.
Yeah, you know, the good news is you can buy that record store if you really wanted. I don't know how profitable they are in the 21st century, but you could buy it. You could just be your toy. That could be your disc jockey room.
Well, I would just go to the record store. I'd leave everything there, but then I would just go and play music, and then I would leave. But it's just stuff where and my kids thankfully have the good music gene, where they'll be bringing up things and, you know, playing good music, and I'm happy that something positive happened out of this, you know, through osmosis or something. But, you know, they listen to good music, and I'm very happy about that.
We had Jim Nance on one time, and he was talking about his house at Pebble Beach and his $10,000 water bill. And he's like, it's just what I splurge on. I wanted to have a golf hole in my backyard. And we're like, you live on Pebble Beach. He's like, I know, but I wanted the actual hole in my backyard. That could have been your golf hole, the record store. It would have been perfect.
Oh, I've been at Jim's par three that he has there. And that when I grow up, I want to be Jim Nance, because that is a spectacular place.
Dan, love you. Thanks so much for the visit. We appreciate it 100 times over. Stay healthy. Stay safe, bud.
Thank you. Stay in touch, guys, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
That's Dan Patrick, our pal, reflecting on the Bulls of the 90s, and we have a major story developing with the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks, just a couple of minutes ago, tweeting that Rocky Wirtz is announcing the team has released John McDonough from his role as president and CEO of the Hawks.
The Hawks?
Yeah.
Wow.
An absolutely massive story that we'll get our arms around coming up, but John McDonough out with the Blackhawks. It's McNeil and Parkinson.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
On the score.
McNeil and Parkins flashback. Flashback.
John McDonough.
Yeah, let's go over to the Big Barn and have a conversation with Big Chief Blackhawk.
My pleasure. I didn't know if I'd ever get invited on your show, so this is, I'm excited.
John, what specifically did Joel do wrong that made it worth firing him?
It wasn't any one thing, Danny, specific. I think we can get more out of this roster, Dan. I'm excited to see Jeremy come on board to what he can do. When you talk about the hot seat or, you know, our jobs in jeopardy, I do not believe that our business is that much different than your business. Your business is about ratings over a long period of time, not necessarily one book, but over a long period of time. The same is true in our industry. We've had a heck of a run here, and I think that, you know, I'm very optimistic about the future of this franchise. But I'm optimistic about Stan's future as well. I can't crystal ball this right now. We don't sit back and lean on the three Stanley Cups. We don't talk about that here.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean anything. In my rearview mirror, I can't see 2015. So I think time will tell on all of this.
That's John McDonough, now the ex-president and CEO of the Chicago Blackhawks, in a stunning piece of breaking news on the day after the NFL draft concludes and the Bulls hire a general manager, and episodes 3 and 4 of The Last Dance come out. The Hawks have relieved one of the most successful sports executives in this city's history. Breaking news on the score brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference podcast series launching May 1st on radio.com. And the bottom of the hour on the score brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including postal workers, CTA staff, and airport staff. We appreciate you. In a press release posted on Blackhawks.com, Chicago Blackhawks chairman Rocky Wirtz announced today that the team has released John McDonough from his role as president and CEO of the organization. Quote, 13 years ago, I recruited John to the Blackhawks because of his leadership, direction, and vision. John brought all of that to the table and more. His contributions went well beyond leading the team to 3 Stanley Cup championships. He rebuilt the front office and helped guide the organization towards a winning vision. As difficult as this is, we believe it was the right decision for the future of the organization and its fans. Later on in the release, citing the COVID-19 crisis as an opportunity to reassess the team's future, quote, While we can reassure our fans there will be hockey again, no one knows what that will look like. What we do know is that it will take a new mindset to successfully transition the organization to win both on and off the ice, Rocky Wirtz said. Danny Wirtz, the fourth generation in the Wirtz family, to have a role in leadership with the Blackhawks, will serve as the vice president of the Blackhawks in an interim capacity. He is quoted as saying, "I cannot adequately express my family's appreciation to John for his contributions to the turnaround of the Blackhawks organization. I take this interim role with the utmost responsibility to the team and will focus on resetting the framework for the next generation of the Chicago Blackhawks. I look forward to working with Rocky to identify our next leader," end quote. Mac, truly a piece of shocking news.
I can't say that I fell out of my chair when I saw the news. The Blackhawks are doing with their actions what we would like all of our teams to do, and that is back up their words, because you just heard in that piece in an interview we did with McDonough about 15, 16 months ago, right after the Joel Quenneville firing, that he doesn't talk about those championships, that they are in a what have you done for me lately business. By letting him go today, the Blackhawks prove that that in fact is the case, and that anything shy of competing for a Western Conference championship is not acceptable. John McDonough's fingerprints on this organization were placed early and often and in a very positive manner. He brought the Blackhawks out of the dark ages, and it didn't take a marketing genius to do it. Hey, let's put our games on television. Imagine that. In the year 2007 or 2008 when he took over, he was the guy responsible for bringing the Winter Classic to Wrigley Field to get the Blackhawks a date with the Red Wings on New Year's Day, when that was still a very much anticipated event in America before the novelty sort of wear off. He told his people who had been tired of people tapping them on the shoulder and say, "Hey, what did you do this for? What did you do that for? You have carte blanche. Do not come to me and ask me to sign off on a piece of equipment if you need it." His equipment staff, his training staff, that had been the old operation. He gave the Hawks everything they needed to compete at the highest levels, including training facilities, better nutrition and diet programs. And from a marketing standpoint, he was very, very smart in getting some former Blackhawks who had had grudges with the organization and it with them back involved to sort of mend some fences with old guard Blackhawks fans. The people he has hired along the way were absolute winners. He had the courage to fire Dennis Savard, a favorite son, just four games into a hockey season in 08 and 09. I didn't like it at the time, but when he picked Joel Quenneville, he picked the second winningest coach in NHL history before he finished his tenure as the Blackhawks benchman. And McDonough, backed up what he said about living too much in the past when he fired Quenneville. John McDonough's contributions to the Hawks cannot be understated. He was a tremendous shot of energy, enthusiasm, and professionalism. And if you're a Blackhawks fan, even just a casual one, raise your glass and offer cheers to John McDonough, who was absolutely spectacular. And I would love to see the Chicago Bears hire him and replace Ted Phillips with him, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
That's not going to happen.
You work for every team in town after what he did with the Cubs and helping that marketing turn around. Listen, there's something to be said for right place, right time. We were just talking to Dan Patrick about it. Like, he was the guy who had the assignment to do the post-game interviews after NBA Finals games in the 90s with the team's best player. And so that meant he got to interview Michael Jordan on national TV. Pretty good for Dan Patrick's career. Right place, right time. John McDonough comes to the Hawks 2007, late November 2007, after they had just acquired over the last, 12 months, a couple of guys by the name of Kane and Taves. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good timing to be in charge of marketing the Blackhawks, right? You put them on TV, you put them on radio, you have Kane and Taves, and the whole thing takes off. And so that is obviously fortunate timing. I'm surprised by the timing of the move to McDonough, because while some of the enthusiasm around the Hawks has dipped, that's undeniable, it's also dipped in direct correlation with their dip in the standings and the quality of team that they're putting on the ice. It like John McDonough is not responsible for the slowness of the blue line defense, or you know, or Corey Crawford's inconsistency with concussions and bad contracts with no movement clauses. You know, like there was questioning of Colleton after Quenneville. The team started to be looking like they were coming around a little bit, but I guess I would have thought that if the Hawks, which I agree with you, like you want your organizations to not just be, you know, showing up late, leaving early, and ordering Chipotle catering for lunch and then just getting out there. Like, if you have these times, re-examine your whole organization. But I would have thought that if I was going to see a headline like that about the Blackhawks, it maybe would have been about Stan Bowman and not about John McDonough.
I get it. Yeah, I get it. There are a lot of people who would love to see Stan Bowman removed from the scenario, but for now they're not getting their wish. But nonetheless, the end of an era, John McDonough, and three cup championships. Look, I want to use this as an opportunity to promote. I'm not necessarily friends with Mark Lazarus. We're very fond of each other, but we're not friends by any means. But his book on the three-time Cup-winning champion Blackhawks, If These Walls Could Talk, illuminates in vivid detail the contributions McDonough made to this team. And some of them are simple and common sense, and yes, timing is everything, as it was for John when he was elevated to Cubs director of marketing in the early 80s. He had a neighborhood mushrooming. He had Harry Carey and Budweiser and old Ryne Sandberg winning the MVP and training for Rick. Those things didn't hurt either. But nonetheless, he was bright enough to, you know, do some things like the Cubs convention that have been, you know, profitable and good for the buzz of the organization, because that wasn't the case in the 70s. It was not a Cubs town definitively in the 70s, and it changed in the 80s when the neighborhood went nuts. So, yeah, right place, right time. But I've had nothing but the highest regard for McDonough and wish him nothing but the best. If I were running a company, Danny, and I wanted a leader, I would not hesitate to call John McDonough. He would be good in pretty much any job that you would give him to front an organization. He's a great leader.
67 years old. Curious if he'll continue to work or if we'll scale it back a bit. The timing of it's just odd. You know, it just strikes me as David Hall, I see on Twitter, calling it unceremonious. You would have just thought that guy had done an A-plus job. If his number one job was to market the Blackhawks and Forbes called it, you know, what did they say? It was the best turnaround in North American sports.
Yeah, he sort of, you know, Jay Blunk was the guy who had that by title marketing and broadcasting. John's tentacles extended beyond the marketing department. But, yes, that was largely how he built his reputation. And they were regarded as one of the greatest sports business stories of the first part of this century, as they should be. I mean, they were getting 4,500 fans a night before they turned it around with the drafting of Kane and Taves.
Yeah, the greatest sports business turnaround ever, according to Forbes magazine. It's just, you would have, I guess I would have thought that it would have not been a firing for him. That they're saying if it doesn't end poorly, it would never end. Like, I don't know, I would have thought John McDonough and the Blackhawks would have parted ways mutually and with, you know, not that he would get a last skate, but, you know, there'd be some sort of ceremony at the United Center before a sellout crowd. Like, it's just, this is just odd. It's an odd thing.
That's the perfect promotion for him, is a last shift. He would laugh about that, just as he laughs about a lot of his silly things along the way. Like, hey, John, when's floppy hat day at Wrigley? Because I think that was something he added to the mix many years ago as well.
The Sting, the Cubs, and the Blackhawks.
Of course it's unceremonious. That's what firings almost invariably are. Unceremonious.
Yes.
Just as it was with Joel. Just as it was with Dennis Savard. Just as it was with, you know, hopefully down the road, Jim Boylan. I almost said Jim Boylan. But Gar Forman, there's nothing ceremonial about a dismissal. You have failed, and we are showing you the door.
White Sox or Bears? Which Chicago team is next for McDonough?
Well, the one who needs him the most is the Bears.
I see. I disagree.
Well, it depends on what
Bears
you,
don't have.
What depends
Bears don't
on
have
what
a
you
money
value.
Problem.
No, the Bears don't have a money problem. You're right, but they have a public relations problem that they don't seem interested in fixing.
I think that you're overstating how big their public relations problem is in 2020. I think some of that stuff is just very old.
Well, I don't know.
You know, it's like the NFL is Teflon, like in that regard. Like
make it right, though. It doesn't make it right to turn your back on your most ardent fans because you don't need them.
No, it doesn't make it right, but their most ardent fans are still there. Like yeah. It's not they, right. You know, like it's. They watch and
just keep urinating on them and tell them it's raining, huh?
They just keep watching in record numbers. If the team is good, they show up. It's not the NFL doesn't have that issue. They seemingly can do anything to any fan base at any time, and short of moving them out of a city, they will still have their fans. That's just how the NFL operates. They own a day of the week, and then lease time on two others.
Yeah,
so
I heard Will Perdue talking with Bernstein today about how he learned very early in his Bulls career, it's a Bears town, and he was fully expecting to talk draft today, co-hosting with Dan.
Yeah, right. Let's talk about the draft. John McDonough fired from the Blackhawks, a big piece of breaking news on a very busy day. What quarantine? It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
The year before, I think, is when, after we lost to Detroit, you and I, with our wives at the time, went to the Caribbean, and I forget what island we went to.
Will Perdue with Bernstein talking about their wives at the time.
If I had a dime for every time that phrase came out of my mouth. Oh, boy.
With our wives at the time.
I texted two people after hearing that today. Tanny, grab that. And Spiegel, got a bite for us next time we work together.
Oh, good.
With our wives at the time.
Our wives at the time.
Yeah, you know, you like lines of demarcation in your life for big events, right?
Yes.
You graduate from college, first job, first wife, first kid, second wife, second kid, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
They were very comfortable today. I've enjoyed Will Perdue with Dan Bernstein these Mondays after The Last Dance. I don't know how much you caught of it, but I very much enjoyed it.
Pretty good chunk of it, actually.
Yeah, Will said that he did the taping of his interview for The Last Dance from Jordan's abandoned house that he can't sell up in Highland Park, Wake Forest, wherever it is.
2 hours to take maybe an 8-second soundbite, but that's television. Most of it winds up on the cutting room floor, Danny. But when you do it right, that's how it works in TV.
Yeah, and I actually thought the things that Will was included in last night, both of them were pretty powerful. Like his saying, like, of being shocked at seeing Jordan have the emotion that they had never seen that side of him until they won the first title.
Yep.
I thought that was really poignant with the imagery of Jordan and his dad, and obviously everything that foreshadowed, and him hugging the trophy. I thought that was great. And then his point about Scotty being the archetype of the point forward, and that's like the direction that basketball has gone with LeBron and Durant and Giannis and all these huge, long players who can handle the basketball, and Scotty being kind of the start of that. So Will Perdue, maybe not involved in it a ton, but when he's there, he makes great points.
Yeah, and I heard him talk about how important that first one was, and I thought so too. You know the old saying, you always remember your first, right? And then you'll have many more. But you hope to anyway when it comes to championships. That first one was. I mean, it's a coronation. It's the first in franchise history, not just for Jordan and Pippen and Jackson and the rest of those Bulls, but it's the first in franchise history. And it was finally slaying the dragon that had been the Detroit Pistons and doing it in convincing fashion. That was a very sweet championship. And the Bulls lost the opener in the finals, but there was nobody who left the building thinking they weren't going to come back and just run it, just run the table on them. They lose the damn opener and they come back and win the next four. And you lose a game, you think, uh-oh, trouble, right? Didn't lose many in these first few rounds, and here we've taken one on the chin. These are the Lakers, but that wasn't how anybody felt. the Bulls played better in the second half. They figured some things out, and everybody was convinced they were going to win the series after dropping the first game.
Yeah, and this is maybe, in retrospect, an obvious point, but this documentary has been so enjoyable because it's not just about the sixth title. Like, it was kind of billed as the last dance and the breaking up of it and the end of it. But, I mean, they've given you the backstory on Scottie and the whole thing on Krause and how they recruited Phil and Michael Jordan from North Carolina and prior to it. Like, this is a 90s Bulls documentary more so than just the behind-the-scenes stuff from 97-98. Because at the beginning when they were advertising this thing, they were like, we have all of these hundreds and hundreds of hours of unseen footage from this camera crew that was there for the 97-98 season. And I didn't know what the breakdown was going to be on how much of it was going to be just about the sixth title and the breakup. And I'm sure it will get more and more into that as they get closer and closer to the quote-unquote last dance. But these first episodes have been so enjoyable because it's gone back even further than that. And then with the look ahead, you know, they're going to do stuff on the Dream Team next week. That's awesome. Like, that's not even about the Bulls, but it's part of the lore of why they became celebrities. So this is a 90s Bulls doc more than just a 97-98 Bulls doc.
It is. It is indeed. And even taking a look at the latter part of the 80s a few times, which I'm all for. Because, I mean, he was drafted in 84, for crying out loud. It took a while to finally get that banner hoisted to the Raptors, or Raptors, if you prefer to call them the Raptors. But, yeah, it should be. It should be more comprehensive. I don't need all of the backstory. You know, I didn't really need to see video of Phil Jackson coaching the Albany Patroons, or, you know, some of the, we talked about last week, some of the Jordan, North Carolina stuff. But anything that's relative to the 80s, 90s Bulls, I'm in for, because Jordan was the greatest, man, until LeBron came along.
Relative to the 90s Bulls or relevant to the 90s Bulls, Shane Reardon?
Oh.
What's the right word? I think relevant is what you were looking for there.
Was it?
I think relevant makes more sense than relative.
Right. That's not the first time I've screwed something up grammatically today.
Relevant, some might say.
Yeah, okay. Well, what does that mean?
What's that mean? What you talking about?
What you talking about?
What you talking about, Shane?
John McDonough's been fired. The Bears brought in hopefully two new starters and two episodes more in the books for The Last Dance. Busy sports day coming up on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.